ever tried watching your athlete's game from anywhere in the world? With Replayer, you actually can. I had a friend watch his son's game live from his flight. My son watched a live game from the car while we were driving up the California coast. It doesn't matter where you are, grandparents across the country, cousins on the other side of the world, teammates who just moved away, set up the camera, hit go live, and everyone with a link is right there on the sideline. Live streaming is free. Unlimited games, unlimited teams, unlimited users. No complex tiers. Everyone gets access. And forget waiting hours for footage. I recorded a 60-minute game, and it was ready in 5 minutes. Players were clipping highlights on the ride home. One camera, made in the USA, unlimited everything. If you never want to miss those moments, head to replayer.com. The link is in the show notes. Hey soccer friends, I just want to give a shout out to our partner, TeamPlayer. They are changing the game on how you find the perfect soccer team for your player. Parents, this means no more endless social media scrolling to find information on teams. With TeamPlayer, everything you need to know is just a few clicks away. It's simple, straightforward, and lets you find the best coach and team for your player without any of the usual headaches. And coaches, we all know how tough it can be to get your team noticed, but when you subscribe to one of TeamPlayer's team plans, you instantly get access to set up an online team profile that allows you to reach more potential players and showcase what your team is all about. It's super easy and lets players and parents see why your team could be the right fit for them. And if you sign up using the promo code PITCH, you can try any team plan free for 1 month. So whether you're managing a team or searching for one, come on over to www.teamplayer.us. That is TeamPlayer.us. And come give TeamPlayer a look.
Family-owned Soccer Innovation is your go-to source for top-quality equipment. Whether you're a player, a supportive family member, or a dedicated coach, they have everything you need to elevate your game. For players, their innovative equipment are designed to boost your skills and performance on the pitch. From their agility cones to their portable goals, they have you covered. And family members, they offer durable equipment that's built to last because we know your support is critical to your player. Coaches, trust me, they can provide the equipment you need to run effective training sessions and shape the next generation of soccer players. Visit Soccer Innovations at soccerinnovations.com to start elevating your game with them.
And if you use the code PITCH, P-I-T-C-H, you can receive up to 10% off your next order. Hey everyone, welcome back to Chat by the Pitch. This is Ian Babcock, your host. This week I have Michael and Stacy Colodi. I'm not going to say much because this is a two-part series. And I'm going to leave it for the final episode closeout to finish talking about this. So let's start this chat and head to the pitch.
Hi there. My name is Mike Colodi. This is my wife, Stacy. And we are the parents of Michael Colodi, who currently plays for FC Dallas.
Thank you for coming on tonight. Michael has had a fantastic year. I have had the pleasure of watching him play at North Texas Soccer Club for the last season and watching him play in the playoffs and the MLS Next Pro Cup, which was awesome. So as a parent, let's go back to the beginning. How was it when he first stepped into the goalie box for you?
That's a fun story. Michael started playing soccer when he was 5. We didn't really start earlier than that because we were just kicking balls around the backyard. He started recreational soccer at 5. It was mainly outdoor, 5-on-5, no goalkeepers. After his second season, was he 6 at that time? He was 6 at that time. His team joined with the second team and they moved to an indoor season. It was a winter season. So as we know in North Texas, it's a year-round sport. So they moved into a winter season and Michael came home and said, "Dad, we're going to be playing inside and they have goalies and I want to be goalie." And we were like, "Okay, sure." So Mike took him out in the backyard and gave him a few tips and we got him some little tiny gloves and just said, go out, give it your all and have a good time. And we were at Inwood.
Blue Sky
in the Colony. And he was in goal and doing really well. And I was like, oh, he's so excited. He was so cute. He was doing really well. And I was all excited. And Mike's like, no, he's good. And I was like, I know, he's doing really well. It's so fun. And he's like, no joke. He's like, he's good. And he really hasn't stepped out of the goal since. And after that time, everyone was like, who is this kid? And that was at the age of 6. And he just ate it up from that moment on. Was always defensive minded, but from that moment on, he was very happy and excited and found that God made him a goalkeeper. It shined bright from the age of 6.
The plan was for that team was probably like every team with 5 and 6 year olds. You're going to rotate through goalies, right? Because everybody wants to play goalie for about 30, 60 seconds. And then I'm bored and I want to go back out and play again. So he went to a practice and did that. Stacey said, we went in the backyard and talked about a couple of things where, like, you can't be hurt, right? Because you can see what's going to happen. They're going to get kicked in the knee or the shin or fall or something and then cry. But you can't do that until you have the ball. Once the play is under control, then if you're hurt, then it's okay. We talked about toughness from the get-go. And we just talked about a couple of things. Just you don't fall on the ball. You try to stop the ball. You get your chest from the ball, whether you dive sideways or forward, you bend over. But it was really fun. We actually have a video of it. So I still have it on our YouTube channel. We actually have video of his first match indoors. And as he said, he looked like a real goalie and did really well. Just had pretty good instincts to get in front of the ball and fearless as far as getting in front of players and breakaways and all that type of stuff. Stacey said it right. We use this line all the time. God made Michael to be a goalie, and that was when he discovered it.
That's awesome. I can relate a little. My 7-year-old daughter decided to be a goalie, but the reasoning why she chose was because she doesn't want to run. But she's a gymnast, so on top of it.
There you go.
At the age of 6, he stepped into the goal. And did he ever go back out to the field to play, to have other experiences? Did he move around a lot just to learn everything, growing through the process until the age? What age did he permanently stick in the box?
So from that day on, he's been a goalie full time. Now, he's had time out there. He's had some good coaches that helped him understand the need to be able to play with his feet. And when you get blowouts, then it's time to come and play. He was always in net, but when the game got out of hand and they were winning by a bunch and he would get to play out in the field a little bit. But he's been, as we said, he discovered that day and he's been there ever since. Because when you find a kid that wants to be goalie longer than 30 or 60 seconds and actually has some skill at it, then you keep him there. So that's been his job since he was 6 years old.
He seems to have a very good facial awareness and sports IQ of the game. Was that a natural instinct from him from a young age that you saw? Because when I don't know which way I'm going to put this out yet, if I'm going to put your interview out first or his interview out, but he said that you played, I believe, if I'm remembering right, I'd have to go back to my notes.
Yes, I did. I played up until to college.
And well, that's what I also played.
Oh, he left that part out?
Well.
Unless I forgot.
No, let her finish the story.
I played when I was 6 to 8. I also was a goalkeeper. And the reason why they threw me in the goal, because I was not afraid of the ball. My experience at soccer lasted, I had 2 seasons, and then I moved indoor towards other athletics, but I did also play soccer.
So we joked that he got all of his goalie skills from mom.
Right.
Because obviously that's true. And his soccer IQ comes from mom. All that came from mom.
Nope.
Yeah, so I did play and grew up playing all up through college, not anywhere near the level where Michael has been, but I at least had played enough to understand the game. And I was never the first team goalie, but I was always a backup on almost every team I played on, almost through high school. I can catch, have good hands, and was tall. So that combination, you can fill in and do that. Not necessarily any good quality of skill, but just enough to know, especially at a young age, here, little son, let me give you some guidance of how to do stuff. But really, Michael's a very athletic kid, has been since day one. He loves sports, has always loved sports. We remember him just being little and going to get a ball and playing something. So he's always been very interested in it. And obviously, he has some athleticism to him and just built upon that. And it started when he was young and just kept that way.
I think the spatial awareness also came from all the sports that he played.
Sure.
He not only played soccer, we did baseball.
A lot.
He really did anything at any point in time just because he thought it was fun. We did baseball, he did football, whether he was
for a few years
in Frisco, but he played basketball. Basketball was not his strong suit, but I think just the cross training of the sports and the different athletics definitely gave him some different perspective.
He learned some things from the different sports. Playing football was just kind of learning how to be tough. When you've never played football before and you start getting tackled or tackling people, that's a level of physicality that you don't have an experience with, and you have to learn how to be tough. So that was what he learned there. In baseball, he was a shortstop. And what it really helped with was the idea of when you get a short pop-up and a shortstop has to turn and run, the idea of turning his hips and running so you can run forward as opposed to backpedaling, which is very helpful as a goalkeeper, because that's, you can see that a lot of times where guys are backpedaling and you can't move. You just can't move very well. So if you can learn to turn your hips and do that, he did it that way. So that, all the sports he played, basketball just helped positioning, passing lanes, and those type of stuff that you learn from basketball is there. Even we had a ping pong table in our house. And from ping pong, you know, we played since he was really little, but when he got ping pong, he learned about angles of hands. And that's, it's when you're trying to block a ball, it's not just a flat hand. You want to angle on the ground. You angle it down so it traps the ball as opposed to just blocking the ball. So all those little things that happen in the sports, there's just things we could pick up. And honestly, we knew that Michael's sport was going to be soccer, again, from six. That was just, that's what he was really naturally talented at. That's what he naturally drifted toward. That was what he cared most about. So we tried to find ways that, you know, a sport let him play stuff and have time with friends. But there are things that he could learn from those other sports that was applicable to soccer.
Now, what age did he decide that you first remember that he decided to only play soccer? Or did he continue playing up until
he
had to make that choice?
Yeah, he played for a long time. I think he played baseball the longest, and I think he was probably 9 or 10, something like that, when he started playing baseball, maybe an 11. Mm-hmm. But at that point, we probably, since when he was 8 or 9 is when we knew that soccer was going to be the thing. The other sports were fun to play, and we had conversations with every team he played on, the coach that he played on, to say, let me just be upfront and honest with you from the get-go. Soccer is his primary thing, and you know, we'll be at it wherever we can, but if there's a conflict, we're going to go to soccer. I remember when he was in sixth grade, and the school he went to had sixth grade football, and so we had a conversation with the football coach there, and he did not really understand that thing. It was, again, we're in Texas, so football is everything, right? But when we had the conversation, this was a school football too, so he really would like to play. He's a really good athlete, and it was a small private school, so you don't have a lot of, you know, you'll like to have on your team, I promise you. But if we have a conflict, we're going to have to do. So we had known for a long time, but it really was probably, I want to say 9, 10, 11 years old, something like that. I think it was before he was playing classic, the classic league, and definitely before he started playing with FC Dallas, that he stopped playing everything else. For sure, once we got to FC Dallas, and a part of that process, then that was a daily thing. So there just was no room in the schedule anymore. Desire or not, at that age, we were just, everything else was done, but he was fully on board. That was, he understood that decision and made that decision. It wasn't us that said, you're going to do this or not do this. That was his choice.
That's amazing, because I feel listening to stories and talking to parents, and some parents like, this is the sport you're playing, this is the only choice you have, and he just naturally fell into soccer and loved it. So do you think you both had influence on this, or do you think it was just the sport that he picked up and ran with?
I think it was mainly him. We both played athletics through Division II college. I was a volleyball player, played a little bit of basketball. Mike was mostly soccer. So we'd been in an athletic environment. We'd done our time. We weren't needing him to succeed for us.
It wasn't our glory.
It wasn't for us. It was all for him. And we always told him, if you want to stop, if at any point you don't want to do this anymore, it's okay. We might be a little heartbroken because we love watching him so much, but we wanted him to know that that was okay, and it needed to be his choice, because it was a lot of time and effort and energy. And not only on Michael's part, but as our whole family. We devoted a lot of time and effort with the two of us sacrificing for him. And he knew that. But it was never held over him as,
oh,
we're putting in so much of this for you, so you better make sure it's worth it. it was always, he always knew we were on his team,
right,
and supporting him and encouraging him. And even to his sister, that she may not have enjoyed a lot of the times where we were dragging her to soccer fields and stuff. She's been there at the end to see, reap the rewards, and is super proud of her brother as well. So it was a family affair, but mm-hmm. it was always his choice.
Yeah. Really, our goal as parents, and this is in the bigger picture, this is not just soccer or sports, was as parents, like probably everybody, you just want your kid to find the thing they are passionate about to do. And that comes through a lot of exposure to stuff. Yes, I played soccer, so I have a little bit of bias toward that. But that was not, we didn't force Michael into soccer. That was just, like most kids, it's the first thing you can play because it's the most simple sport, right? You just run and kick the ball. And we've all seen when they're 5 and 6 and there's just a mob that's running around. But that's okay. That's basketball and baseball or football are much more complicated sports and requires higher level of coordination and skill to do that. So that's why soccer is generally the first sport that everybody plays. It just turns out that he really enjoys it. And as he got further and further along, that never changed. In fact, he loved it more. It's a major driver for him and has been for a long time. The idea of kind of him playing professionally never became, there's always the, oh, your kid's good, that's neat. Hey, he could be a pro. We say a lot of things when they're 7. So it didn't really become a realistic possibility until we got into kind of the FC Dallas program and kind of see where he was compared to other kids around. First around the Metroplex and then through Dallas's other kids around the country. But it was always his choice. It was what he wanted to do. We just wanted to support him. Our goal as parents for both of our kids is we want to help you find the things that you're passionate about. And if you are, we want to support you. You know, whether that's soccer or baseball or sports, whether it's art, whether it's dance, whether it's cheerleading. And it was easy for us because that was something that he did that we enjoyed doing. Had he done something else that wasn't necessarily our thing, we still would have been all in to support either of our kids to do what they want to do. So it was a lovely convenience that he became very passionate about something that we really love too.
I love hearing that. Thank you so much. Yeah. It's nice to hear that. It's nice and refreshing because I think a lot of parents, I know I've been guilty of it. I look at my son from the young age when he realized what soccer was, and his first goes, I don't want to play soccer in the United States. I want to go play in the Champions League. Like he goes, I want to go play in Europe. And so now as he's progressing, we have the conversation of how do you get there and what do you have to sacrifice? I'm assuming Michael sacrificed a lot to get there. And I think what he's, I don't remember what he said to me, but how did you view his sacrifices? Because I can relate to my child and he's given up going to birthday parties and activities and school stuff because soccer was his love. He's only 10 and I can't count how many times he gave up going to birthday parties because he had a game at the same time or a school function that was not required, but he went to practice instead. And as parents, we gave him the option to do whatever he wanted.
Sure.
But how do you view Michael's sacrifices through the years going through? Because granted, he went to Columbia. How prestigious is that? That's an amazing feat. And then getting to go come back home and play for the local club on North Texas soccer clubs. The sacrifices he gave up, did you view him giving them up or was this just what he knew he needed to do?
I think he realized that was part of it. The joke we had in the family, and I think this exists in everybody that's in the soccer world, says, I can't, we have soccer, right? We probably always use that line. As you tell the story of your son, we're busy. We can't go to this because we have a soccer game or two or three or a tournament or whatever it is. So that was a very prevalent part of our life. And he knew that if you're going to spend your time going to training or going to games, then the amount of free time that you have to go do other things, whether that's birthday parties or just hang out with friends or go on some event that they're doing, is pretty limited. And that, again, that was easy for him because he loved going to play or going to train. That was a big part of here. So it really wasn't, we had to remind him or force him. He just, I think, inherently understood that. And they went along the process of doing that.
Sometimes we had to remind him he had to do his schoolwork because he'd rather go play.
Sure.
He'd rather go train or do something or go practice. We're like, no, you really have to do your schoolwork or you have to do your chores. But he just loved it that much.
Now, because he did go to, I don't want to get there yet.
Okay.
Let's continue going through the process here.
You get there eventually too, so that's all right.
Because I think the schooling and everything like that and how kids today think they can just not have good grades and go be pro athletes. And here my son told me he didn't have to learn how to read because he's going to be a pro athlete and make all this money at 6 years old or 7 years old. And like, no, you have to be able to read your contract and understand it and not be bamboozled by someone down the road. So as he's going through this progress, he played in Classic League. Did he play for FCD Academy in Classic League, or did he play for another?
So his kind of path for the first, so after he got discovered by the Texas Soccer World playing indoor, as the state described, we had the school, he went to a private school in Carrollton when he was little. And the story we like to tell was he was just playing this combined rec team. And a friend of his from school, they had a separate club team that were playing there. And they were playing, I think, following his game. And they're watching. And he stood out very much as a quality goalkeeper at the age of 6 or 7. And this other family that we knew at the time, but didn't realize they were there, they were watching the game. And the coach comes to this and says to the assistant coach, "Hey, who's that goalie out there?" And his son, who was one of Michael's friends at school, said, "Oh, that's my buddy from school, Michael." So that was our entryway into a little more organized club soccer thing. And it was just a private one-off team that was there that was coached by a dad. And he did that for, I think, 2 or 3 years and then transitioned into Solar. So through that club, we got introduced into Solar and got into that program. And we're with Solar through 2 years of Classic League.
I think so.
Is that correct? So basically under 11 and under 12, and did that.
And then he transitioned to SC Dallas tryouts.
After those first season of Classic League, they were pretty good the first year, and then the development of stuff, we were probably in the second tier of 10 how the Classic League works. And that first year, they have a group of 20, so you have a big league and you play everybody. And then and the second one, we did fine and stayed up. And then the second league, then we were definitely in the lower group of the one there where I'd probably be relegated. So it was a rough one in there. We realized that with that team, we had reached what Michael's limit was. He couldn't, when getting a ball in the back, he had to punt away. He couldn't really distribute his fullbacks because they couldn't play out of the back very well, which we understood would be needed to play that way. So we reached what we saw was the limits of the team we were with. And that's when we made the choice of let's go explore. At that point, they were just starting pre-academy. So it was pre-academy tryouts we did with FC Dallas, and FC Dallas then invited him to be a part of their, at that time, a pre-academy program, which would flow into the academy program.
So I understand how FC Dallas works. So there's levels, and most parents, if you don't know this, you have to go pay attention. I live in Keller, and you have FC Dallas West, mm-hmm. and if you want to go play at the higher level, you have to go more towards Frisco.
Right.
Was he more invited out of the gate, or did he work his way up into what would be the ECNL or MLS Next teams today?
Proximity-wise, fortunately enough, we lived in Frisco, so that worked out well. But from the pre-academy tryouts, it was right onto the pre-academy team that he got offered. And that shifted him immediately out of private school into the development academy, where they all go to middle school together and they train in the morning. They train in the afternoon in middle school where they bus them. They train every day. Expenses start to get covered by the club and some of those things. So it was a pretty quick transition for him right to the top team, FC Dallas team in his age bracket. Actually, he was playing a year up.
He played a year up for like the first 2 years, maybe.
Yeah. So he was a 12-year-old playing on the U13 development academy, pre-academy team.
Yeah.
And stayed pretty much with it the whole time. There was not a whole lot of him playing on the lower divisions, which was fortunate. It just, again, his talent level just led him to be that. It also helped that he was a goalkeeper. There's not a whole lot of
the pool was
that position that's pretty elite. So if you're a midfielder or a defender, you may get shifted around a little bit more, but the pool was small for the goalkeeper world. So he was on that top team from the get-go. Mm-hmm.
Did you all spend a lot of time? I know FC Dallas has a really good program for goalkeepers, coaching-wise, on to help players to become better. Because he was playing at more on the top level, did you have to go outside for extra help, or was it able to be facilitated by FCD?
No. In FC Dallas, they always had goalkeeper coaches and goalkeeper-specific training. So that was there. While he was with Solar, Solar at the time had a goalkeeper coach kind of club-wide. Jesse Yamas is his name.
Yamas.
And he's currently the president of
Sidekicks.
Of the Sidekicks. So that's where he is at now. But so Michael went for probably from the age of basically once he started with Solar at 7 through 11, we were going to goalkeeper training. Basically, whenever they had it, we were going. So we went as year long as it would go. And then when he transitioned to FC Dallas, and then he just moved into that. In fact, I don't think he actually had other training. I think he was just part of his regulation training that he was getting to work with the academy or pre-academy goalkeeper coaches as part of his regular training regimen.
Yeah.
And I guess that's very nice, and economical might be the right word to use for absolutely families.
We were very blessed, and we recognize the privilege that he got to have and that we got to have financially of we get to be a part of this group that does it and it's covered. So I recognize that that's not the case for everybody, and we were fortunate that we got to partake in something that was not something that everybody has access to.
As he progressed, and at what age, you said he played up so he played a year older. For how many years again?
I think he played up, I know for sure, he was, when they were under 14s, he was 13. After that, it gets a little fuzzy in my memories. I don't remember if he played at 14, if he played up with the 15s, 16s, maybe a few times.
I think he played on the 16s twice.
So generally until he was, but he played up until he basically threw 13. And then at 14, he stayed at that level and then moved up 15, 16s. At those ages, then you're jumping up 2 years at a time. So that's what his playing up was.
That was under Lucci, I think.
Right.
And he was with Lucci for 2 years, I think.
I bet. Was that an awesome experience to play underneath Lucci? I've only great things about him in the academy.
Michael really enjoyed it. He really enjoyed having Lucci as a coach. And I think he challenged him. Obviously, he was a very talented coach getting a first team job out of the academy himself. So Michael really enjoyed playing for him. And I remember the year, I think he was after he was when he was 14 and then going up into the 15, 16, which was Lucci's team. I remember Lucci having a little conversation with him after a training one time. And it's a little bit of a little more manly conversation than it is a kid conversation. Hey, are you think you're ready? You know, I'm going to push you and challenge you. But I think if you can keep working hard and getting better, I think you can help us out in the team. I think he really enjoyed having Lucci as a coach. He's always talked about him positively.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Yeah. Now, maybe you can explain this to me as a parent, because my kids are young and other clubs and other teams run things differently. How much interaction at this age did you all have with the coaching staff or whoever was in charge to help guide you in the direction Michael might want to go? Obviously, he went off to college, but did they give advice or was there feedback on things that he needs to be looking at or be doing for his future? At the age of 13, 14 years old?
I would say it moved along the lines of when you have a elementary student, you get a lot of interaction with teachers and they're feeding information to the parents as well as the kid because they realize the kid doesn't necessarily give all the information to the parents. I was a manager of the team through Solar for quite some time, so I got a lot of information. Then you move into those middle school age and your teachers and coaches maybe try to funnel information a little bit more through the kids and you get a little bit less interaction. And then as you get into high school, it's not much at all. So we tried to use that as a model and tried to get Michael to do more of the interacting with the coaches. If he had a problem, if he wasn't playing enough or wasn't happy with the situation, at some point, it's not mom and dad's job to go fix it for them. They have to learn how to talk to the coaches. And it's different with every kid. So I think parents have to understand, navigate the situation, how their kid is, how the coaches are. Some coaches are very communicative with parents. I think once you get into that upper echelon of teams with the academy, with FC Dallas, the coaches aren't as approachable necessarily. And we never felt like we should approach them if we had a question about the team or the playing.
Yeah.
There are obviously a lot of resources with FC Dallas. As the kids get older, as far as colleges and helping with nutrition and stuff like that that you can access. And coaches are always willing to help. But we are always very cautious mm-hmm. about being the parent that's always waiting on the sideline for the coach. So I think we were more involved at a younger age. And as he progressed, we tried to distance that a little bit and let Michael take the reins a little bit more for his own training and playing time and information.
I would say our interaction with coaches at the club was more logistical, right?
Sure.
Here's the game is on Saturday out of town. You need to be at the bus pickup spot at this time. I honestly don't remember a single conversation with a coach about Michael's development. And as Stacy said, we were very cautious about asking. We do want to be annoying parents. I would say they're not, at least in our experience, they were not forthcoming with sharing, here's what your kid is doing well, here's what you need to work on. Did they have those conversations with him? In some ways. I guess my perception of the FC Alice model in the academy world is they have these boys and girls now, they have that program, they have them there every day and they're just working on stuff. So it's more to the routine of what a professional soccer environment is like. And now that we get the experience mm-hmm. Michael's world in that now, we can look back and see the similarities of what it's like. It's been a month or two. Okay, hey, we're going to have a special conversation and talk about performance review like we have in work. That never really happened with him, at least as far as we understand. Before we got to be a pro, it was just, okay, we're training today, and okay, we're done now. We're going to train on, we have Sunday off. We'll be back Monday morning. So it was a lot more logistical interaction, but it was very little to almost none as far as developmental interaction and feedback and conversation between us and the club in any capacity.
Okay. Now, as he's progressing through this age, I know that the ages 13, 14, and so on start being more critical for, I call it mental toughness, mental awareness, whatever you want to call it. As parents, how did you guide and nurture those moments with him? Because I have interviewed several goalkeeping coaches now, and I agree with them before we ever talked. Goalie is the loneliest position. I don't care what age you're at. If your team wins, you're at the pool parties. If your team lose, you're not invited anywhere. Right. And as a parent, we've made sure my son knows, no, that's the hardest position on the field, because if, whenever everyone else fails, he has to pick up your slack. And to make sure that after a tough game, he goes up and puts his arm around the goalkeeper. How did you teach him to have those moments when players didn't do that, or a coach didn't do that for him? Because it's very easy to get into your own head, especially at a young age, and just destroy yourself. And obviously he's had some phenomenal games where I felt like he was struggling in part of it, and he just came back and crushed it. Playoffs is one of those examples where he was struggling, and even the cup final, he did phenomenal, but there was moments where you saw like he could have just broke down and gave up, but he just persevered through those moments.
I would say the biggest thing, how he got good at it, and I think he's very good. He's very mentally tough and strong and has the ability to kind of manage his head, right, as you described. He got it through reps. He's been a goalie since he was 6 years old. So he's been in nets, and he's been the final chance to stop something for most of his life. And he has had success at that, and he has had, I mean, a lot of success at that, and he has had a lot of failure in that. As you understand, when you're the goalie, your success and failure is very, very apparent to everybody. If you're a midfielder, okay, I didn't quite make a good touch here. The coaches might recognize that. Some knowledgeable parents might recognize that. But it's not blatantly obvious when you succeed or fail. Or it might not be. Sometimes it is, and sometimes it's not. When you're a goalie, it's almost binary in nature, right? They scored, they didn't score. And while it's not always the goalie's fault if you score, that's the easiest kind of metric to determine success or failure. And so he's been scored on a bunch. He's 23 now. Since he was 6, he's been scored on a bunch for 17 years. You get good at anything you do for 17 years, you get good at handling it, success and failure. And that's just part of learning. That is, it's like a cornerback in football. It's like a pitcher in baseball. When you have a failure, you have to have a short memory. And I think that's a skill more than it's a talent. It's not something that anybody comes by naturally. You have to learn how to do that. It's not like learning to be tough and thick-skinned, right? No one's thick-skinned day one. when you have the challenges, you have criticisms, you have failures, through those and the repetition of those, you learn how to handle that in any environment, whether that's the sports or work or life or anything. So I think that's a lot of it was just there. And we talked to him. That's part of it. Hey, you had a hard day. We'll give you a hug. I'm sorry. It was bad. But as part of that learning, just you have to learn to get past that. If you made a mistake or the guy just made a good shot, you have to learn how to deal with that and then get your head in the moment and not live 5 minutes ago or a game ago or last year or whatever the stuff is. You have to learn to live in the present and focus on that. And I think he's learned how to manage emotions that way. When he was little, we made fun of it. When he would get scored on or something bad, he would always tear up and he always put his hands here like this under his eyes. As you can see, when he was something bad, he would do like, and he's like 6 or 7 this time. But you could see where he started to learn, happen less and less as he figured out how to never be too low and the same would never be too high, right? Yes, you have great success. Failure is one touch away or one mistake away. So just be careful and manage your emotions to keep even keeled and focused on the job. And that's something he's learned really well.
Now, this is where I as a parent struggle, and maybe you can give other parents advice on the sideline. Like, how do you keep your emotions checked? Like, I have sayings with my son. I have EAR, and EAR stands for emotions affect your attitude. Your attitude affects your results. Mm-hmm. We made it very quick. All I have to say is EAR. When I see him getting very emotional, I'll just yell EAR to him, and he knows what it means and why I'm saying it, because I'm trying to point out where he's starting to lose control. And I don't, as a parent, I need to learn not to do that, because sure, he has to learn to self-regulate. But sure, at the same time, he's 10 for another couple of weeks. But
yeah,
it's pointing those moments out where he can start seeing them on his own. And I don't know, as a parent and talking to sports psychologists now, it's like I have to learn to stop doing that and let him figure it out on his own. But he gets to the point where he's so worked up and he can't self-regulate back down. As a parent, like, how do you figure out those moments? Being in the box, maybe he just had a natural talent of learning to keep those emotions under control since he's been in between the post or the box, whatever you want to call it. At a young age, he learned to control those emotions because of defeat and failures, and then learning there's so much more with success later on. What advice would you give parents on the sidelines then?
I'm trying to think back to when Michael was 10. It seems so long ago, yet just yesterday. I think part of Michael is he's so competitive that when he would make a mistake, he was so competitive with himself and with everything else that he was not going to let that happen again. So I think that was just a natural tendency of his. But I think as parents, one is just to naturally support your kid, and you just try your best not to be the one critical at all times person in their lives. They get that. They have that a lot, probably, if they're playing. The coaches are going to yell at them from the sidelines. Parents of your team or other teams are going to yell at them at the sidelines. I was always trying to be just the supportive one, making sure he knew that no matter what, we were still going to love him, support him, and feed him dinner. We weren't going to make him starve because he did poorly. But at some point, we would always talk about what happened in the games and let him talk and express and not fill the silence with us talking at him, but let him process what happened and talk through it. And then a lot of times I remember him saying, oh, yeah, I guess it wasn't that bad. I feel like I played horrible, even though we won, or I should have gotten that. And then as he thinks about, yeah, maybe it wasn't my fault. So I think helping them process through it will allow them to recognize it when it happens, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think we did try to help them to develop some skills of self-analysis, right? And that may not... When they're young, that's hard in the moment. It's something they can just start to be aware of, and it's a skill set they can build. But part of that is this, as Stacey said, it's the truth is, in a young person's soccer career, and as parents, we think everything is, this is the most important thing in your entire life, is this game on Saturday against Team X. And the truth is, none of that's absolutely true. One game, one successful, you score a goal, you let in a goal. In the long run, it means absolutely nothing. And that's hard, probably particularly for parents to keep in mind, is to say, it's okay. It is a process and a journey, and there's going to be successes and failures with the whole thing. And both of those are going to help your child to get better. And probably even the failures are even more helpful to help them develop and get better, whether that's mentally, whether that's technically, whether that's emotionally, whether it's tactically. Everything that happens, you learn from. It's good, you learn. It's bad, you probably learn more. And failures are what help you to learn that. And we ask for games. The first thing is, hey, we give you love. We love you. We enjoy watching you play. Glad you won. Sorry you lost. But we enjoyed it. And thanks for letting us watch you play. And we love you. And then later we would talk about stuff. If I'm frank, I probably talked about that more too soon when he was younger and learned. Again, I had to evolve as a sports parent too. I was a terrible sports parent when we were young because I'd never been before. And you have to learn how to be a good sports parent. That's something for sports parents to think. Learn from lessons of people that have been there for a while. It's interesting to see how tangents are for a minute. I'll come back to this. If you go to a under-7 soccer game and you watch parents, so and the smile and your giggle tells me that you understand exactly. It is chaos and it is just the wild, wild west. If you go, we noticed this when he was in the academy, we're going to under-18 games. And so contrast the under-7, which we all understand. It's just everybody's yelling, hollering, and getting fired up at everything. In an under-17 game, all the parents that are there are just sitting there and nobody's saying a word. They may go, oh, hey, good job. That's it. They're not talking. And these are the ones that have experienced and have been through this 10-year process and have come out the other side of it. And their kid didn't quit and they didn't quit and no one killed anybody. But we all learned to shut up and watch the game and enjoy it. So that's kind of thing for parents. Remember, your job is to support. You're not the coach. If you know what you're talking about and can be helpful, that's okay. But just be careful about that. Your job is to make sure your kid enjoys it and has fun, has a good experience. I actually listened to a podcast, Landon Donovan and Tim Howard's podcast. I listened to today, and they're talking about youth soccer a little bit. And Tim Howard was saying, the most important thing for sports parents is to make sure your kids are having fun. Why do kids quit? Because they don't have any fun anymore. For whatever reason. The conflicts are there. The pressure from mom and dad are there. They can't spend time with their friends. So if you want your kids to have a chance to develop in soccer, it needs to be enjoyable for them. They have to like it. So how do you help them like it? And that's, man, it was fun to watch you play. You did really good today. Or, man, that was a rough one. That stinks. I'm sorry for you.
Yeah, I read a lot. I read a lot on social media, and I my wife cracks up. She goes, "You only thing I think about soccer. I can't get it off my mind."
Sure.
I wake up thinking about it. We had a conversation earlier in the day. I'm going back to the conversation later in the evening. She goes, "Is that all you think about?" I'm like, "Yes, I can't turn it off." And I read something. It was engagement, player engagement from a coaching perspective and a parent perspective. And he talks more on the coaching side. It's keeping players engaged.
Yeah.
It just has to be fun and exciting. And I think you talked about the pressures of the parents and all everything else. I think we squash kids dropping out of sports at the age of U13 and younger at the 70% rate is because we as parents suck the fun out of it.
Yeah.
I've had a very hard time over this winter break with my son because we played hallway soccer, but we didn't work on any soccer skills.
Mm-hmm.
But my wife has been reiterating to me as a parent, let him be a kid. He's only a kid once.
Yeah.
And he sacrifices all the time for this game, all the other times of the year. Let him just be a kid. And I think that's we as parents, I'm at a younger age, just let them be a kid every now and then and not just harp on something. And yeah, I'm right there with you. When do you have that conversation with your kid after a game? I've just learned, what music do you want to listen to? What do you want to listen to when we get in the car? And
yep.
Just tell him I love him, and if he has any questions about the game, I'm more than glad to give feedback later.
Right.
Yep. We all have to figure out our way, right? Whatever way
yes.
it is for our family with our kids, you got to figure that out.
So as he's progressed now, he's 14, 15 years old. Is this when college started to become an idea for him, or was this more of a stage in his life where he is trying to figure out if that is where he wants to go, or if he wants to stay with soccer after the age of 18? Or was it always a goal for him to go play beyond the age of 18 somewhere?
When he started to be in that 14 to 16, he was playing with the likes of Jesus Ferreira. He was playing, we were playing against Paxton Pomykal when he was 16 and we were 14, or something in those routes. So he was surrounded by a lot of guys making a leap to professional. Played with Brian Reynolds, who was signed at 15. So all these guys he's seeing and I want to do that. He knew, I want to play professionally. To be honest, college was a little bit of the fallback plan.
Yeah.
We both graduated from a very good engineering school, but we also realized that college isn't for everyone. And it's okay if you can get a job and you can be successful in an environment or a career that you want to be in, trade school, athlete, whatever. I work in the hospitality industry, and there's a lot of people that are very successful that do not have college degrees. You don't have to go to college. So it was always okay if he didn't want to go to college. We really didn't know how to navigate a professional soccer world. We didn't have connections that Brian Reynolds' dad did, that Jesus Ferreira's dad did. We were just a couple of middle-class ex-college athletes with a talented kid.
Just some knuckleheads, didn't know what we were doing.
Going, I don't know. Ask your buddy.
Yeah.
That's when he maybe started having a little more conversations with the staff at SC Dallas that had college connections and looking at to see what a path might look like for him. Yeah. We also think that if he would have grown and been 6'3", he would have been signed nearly immediately, but he's not. So we had to look at alternatives, and the college avenue was a secondary option, but it was the option that was going to work for him, and he could play soccer. The Columbia coach was heavily recruited by the Columbia coach, who actually coached Paxton's
older brother,
who went to Columbia. And so there was a little bit of an overlap there in our world. And he went to a couple other colleges and looking at their programs as well. But for him, the soccer was really the focus almost the entire time.
If you don't go to college, that's okay. Again, our role as a parent, and we say this all the time, is our top priority for our kids is to make sure that you can survive as an adult, right? Mom and dad are not going to take care of you ever, nor should we. Our job is to raise you up so that you are capable of taking care of yourself in society and being a functional adult, whatever that looks like for that kid. Again, Michael wanted to play pro. That was top of list for a long, long time. Probably 10 or 11 at that point, that was a real goal for him. But we also were realistic. Right? You're 1 knee or injury away from being done. And that's at any age, right? And that's still the case today. You're one bad collision from being done in your career. So if that doesn't happen, whether you're 12, 19, 27, what then? And there's not a right or wrong with that. We painted that as a college education, and Columbia wasn't on the radar at that point. But a college education is a path to an educational foundation that gives you skills that you can use to take care of yourself forever. Just like the rest of us, working Joes, that's why we go to work, because we need to pay the bills. And everybody needs to do that. And you have to have a skill set to earn an income and whatever that is. So we were very realistic of going, hey, if you can play pro, that's awesome. And we will fully support that. But you need to be prepared of handling how to adjust or pivot if something happens and that, you get hurt. Are you not good enough? That's one of the things we realize in everyone in the soccer pyramid. As you get going up and up higher of levels, the pool gets smaller and the competition increases. And Michael's still dealing with that today. Today is the second day of training for FC Dallas, and his environment that he is in today is a lot more challenging than the one he was in last year. And he was a professional soccer player last year. So it still goes up and it gets harder and harder, but you have to be prepared if something doesn't happen, doesn't work out, what you're going to do. So that's how we entered the college thing. But college can be a pathway to soccer. It's not probably the most common anymore, but it is a pathway. So that's how we navigated that. So probably when he was, we really didn't have that conversation too much until he was probably 15 or 16. So it wasn't a big, we weren't there yet. The process can't even begin then. It was more conceptual, just to keep that idea in his head. So when it came to points where you have to make some decisions, he was aware of those ideas.
That's a huge phase to hit, or a huge point for any athlete to hit. It's figuring out which direction to go. We are, I call us one of the hot spots in the country for soccer. And depending on who you talk to, they'll always rank us in the top five. But to me, we have a lot of kids that go pro at a very young age. I'm looking at the women's side and the men's side. I can't believe how many kids are signing homegrown contracts with FC Dallas, or now with Dallas Trinity, or getting recruited in California or wherever it may be to go play. And we have, or going to go play on the youth national team. Those are all experiences that I don't think we as parents can comprehend if you're on the outside of it. You guys are on the inside of it now, or I guess I'm more on the tail end of it as a youth parent. Now you're on the pro athlete parent side, which is, I can't even imagine how more nerve wracking that is, because bigger consequences and bigger emotions all around, just because there'll always be your little kid. As my parents remind me, I'm 40 and my parents remind me, like, you're still my baby. And looking at it, as he's gone through this, have you viewed him going off to college and now has his pro career, sitting back, watching him be successful? My little bit of conversation I did have with him, and a little bit more research I did after the conversation with him, he had a very successful career at Columbia, if not one of the better times at Columbia for the men's soccer program. Now, going through that process of being there, do you think the experiences he had back here in Dallas getting him ready, did he play for ODP or youth national team at all? Or did he have those experiences? And how was that, as you as a parent, experienced that? This is us living vicariously through you guys right now, not our kids.
So, yes, he did play. He did do both ODP. He did ODP at, I'm trying to remember what age. I guess it was under 11. Is that when they started?
They started at 12 or 11, yeah.
Okay. He got in the year early. So whatever the process of whatever waiver or bypass we got in, we were able to get in early. So he played. He was a year up for the duration of which he played ODP. So he did that for maybe two years. Was all. ODP was some neat experiences. I don't know that it was, it's hard to describe. I don't necessarily have, it was real helpful in his development. It was just a different experience to have. Playing with other guys, going to different places, that was positive, of course. And he did play on some, he played on national teams at the under 14 level, basically through some camps, and then on the team at under 16 level. So he did that. And he had some incredible experiences as part of that. So he got to travel. He went to France one year for some friendly matches.
And Japan.
And he went to Japan one time for a tournament up there. And that was with the under 16 team. And that was just really cool experiences. And yes, we had to get up at 2 o'clock in the morning to watch him on whatever we were streaming on to watch it. Just a really positive experience and some experiences of dealing with the other top players of the country. So that's really where our world expanded from a Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas area to a U.S.-wide type of place. So he was getting experience. So he knows, you talk about any player in America soccer that is his age, right? That is 23, 24.
Gio Reyna.
Yeah, he knows those guys that play. He's played with Gio Reyna. And even some guys, he knows who Wes McKinney is. He knows who Reggie Cannon is, those type of FC Dallas guys. Richards. He knows who all those guys are across the country that are various levels of pro now and are playing across the world. And those experiences were how he got those things. The other aspect of it, I think, that was really helpful was he's very self-sustaining. He can be on his own. And the way I describe it is when he was 16 years old and he was going on a trip somewhere, we didn't take him to the airport anymore. We just dropped him off by the car. Very hesitantly from our perspective. Are you okay? Do you need to go inside with you? Oh, no, I know what I'm doing. I'm good. If you're a parent that's out there and has a 16-year-old, okay, they're going to travel across, go to somewhere else in the world. They're going to Europe or Japan. Okay, hey, would you text at some point when you have a Wi-Fi signal can do that? Just let them go. And he got comfortable, and he's very comfortable with travel, and he's been all around, and he's navigating airports and planes and hotel world. So a lot of those experiences were just helpful to give him some life experiences that are very outside the normal for a teenager. That was a really positive experience through ODP and through national team stuff, was just that way. And just having exposure to kids from other parts of the country.
Now, it's interesting because you talk about that. I hesitate as a parent. I have worked in aviation for almost 19 years now. Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine dropping. I don't even drop my own parents off at the airport. I walk them to security still to this day when they come to visit. I can't imagine just kicking my kid to the curb. I have to give you props for that. But you're also creating an experience for him to have where real life. At the end of the day, this will be his life when he went off to college. And that was one thing I was going to ask you about. How did you prep him at a young age to be responsible? You just talked about it. Like, you just let him be at being hesitant, but you let him be self-efficient. I think the hardest lesson is teaching your kids how to do their own laundry, but that's a whole nother story that we can get deviated off very easy. But how did you foster that education process at the younger ages then? So when he did go off to college and when he did go off to be a pro, when he came back from college, to foster those experiences at a younger age so he can be independent.
Well, to be fair, when he was 16 and we just kicked him out of the car at the airport, that wasn't the first time. Honestly, he'd been doing it for 3 years. I think the first time was when he was 13.
That he traveled somewhere? Yeah.
He was maybe 13 and he was traveling with the 15s with Coach Molina from FC Dallas. That time we were like, we parked the car and walked him in and made sure he was okay. And even I think Coach Molina came over and said, okay, I got him. He could tell that we're the new parents that
he was definitely
bring
ready
my
for
child
that
back home.
Before we were. He told us, I'm ready. So we had to listen to him and go, okay, we trust you.
But we had lots of conversations. I would always tell him, I know you probably know this, and I'm sorry, but I'm a mom. I have to say it. If I have to at least actually verbalize it to you so that I know I've done my job to say things to you. But it starts small. You're not dropping them off at the airport the first time. It's the first time you're walking them in and making sure they're handed off to the coach. And the second time, you watch them walk a little bit further by themselves. It grows in the responsibility, and you learn that they're going to be okay and they're in a good environment. You make sure you have your securities in place that you can reach them or reach the coaches as needed. A lot of prayer. To make sure they're going to be okay, because a lot of it as a parent, even if your kid is not a professional athlete, not flying across the world, the first time you let them sleep over at someone's house, the first time you let them drive their car where you're not with them, all those little milestones are all things that build upon each other. And you have to have that underlying trust and respect that they know what they're doing and hold them accountable to the rules and the responsibility that you set forth with them. But it starts small. I don't think it's any big leap. I don't think what we did was anything grand or special, just like training a dog, just training them and helping them along the way and reiterating and reemphasizing the important aspects. I'm never going to have all the information I need about where my kids are. I can track them on my phone.
That's still the case today.
Yeah, still the case today with a 23 and 25-year-old. So your mom's the same way. You're always my baby. I always want to know where you are and that you're safe and protected. But there does come that point where you have to be okay with letting them go.
And for college-wise, I mean, that the travel part and going around the world on their own, that's hard. The other aspect was the educational part. And if I'm real honest, as we talked about how important soccer has always been to Michael, he never struggled with motivation for soccer. It got his full effort all the time. School, not always the case. So that was the process. And as Stacey talked about training, when he was younger, elementary school was pretty easy because elementary school. Once you get to middle school, you kind of transition and we're doing a little bit of your own, you have to take your own stuff. That was not always his full, it didn't always have his full effort. And we had to just over time, when he was in middle school, we're nagging, okay, do you have your homework done? What is your homework? Let me see it. Make sure you got it done right. You're managing very closely. You're very much micromanaging. But as it gets older, they have to learn. But the big point for us with him was helping him understand the idea that you have to get your work done before you can play, right? If you don't get your work done, you're not going to play. And for him, the work was school, right? soccer was never work. It was just always fun and playing. But you have a responsibility to do the school stuff as well. I'm sorry if you like it or not. I don't care. This is the law. You have to go to school. You got to get through. You got to graduate high school. That's required of you. And if you want to go farther, then that's part of that as well. And to get into college, if that's going to be a path you're going to take, if you don't get drafted and become a pro at the age of 16, you may have to go to college. And to get into college, you have to have good grades. Even in high school, probably ninth grade, it was still a little poor, managing a little bit and checking up a lot. In 10th grade, we observed, and I don't know how other families are, this is just our experience, that's when he started to take ownership over his schoolwork. And we'd ask the questions, and he knew what questions were asked. We asked the same questions every day. Then he would proactively answer them all. Here's my homework. I've got this done. I got to get this done. This is due tomorrow. This is going to do on Thursday, and my plan is to work on it here. We're very transparent in what we're going to ask. We're not going to surprise you with new questions. We're going to ask the same question all the time. And once he figured out what the questions were, and as we observed, he took ownership over his education. I'll get my work done, and I'll get it done well, or sometimes well enough. But once that was done, that took care of the school stuff. And by the time he was a junior and senior high school, we didn't have to worry about that. We weren't having to manage his schoolwork. But that was a process. Again, it didn't happen just like going to the airport. It wasn't just, hey, one day we're doing it, helping you everything, and one day you're doing it all on your own. It's a growth process. And as he learned, we're providing guide rails. That's what parenting is, sometimes just guide rails. We're going to aim you this way, and if you're doing good, you're fine. But if you drop the rail, we'll patch it back in, and we would do that. But as he got older, like everybody else, he matures and gets and kind of stays on the road all that with, on his own without us having to kick him back on.
Hey, everyone. I hope you all have enjoyed this week's episode of Chat by the Pitch. I'm going to keep this short and sweet and save the rest for next week's episode. On all the podcast sites that you listen to this on, give me a review, share this, share with others. The more I can make this grow, the more I can continue doing this. I'm really trying to make a difference in our soccer community. So I hope you guys have enjoyed all this. And until next time, I'll see you at the pitch.